Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you very much for joining us on the program today. I think you're going to enjoy it. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. And we also archive these programs on the radio shows page at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. And we come your way bringing you new paradigms for a new world, choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I don't know what your dreams are. I know what mine are, and I've got some pretty big ones. And, well, the universe is working on them. I'm just trying to stay out of the way. I have lots of questions for the universe as to why it's not happening the way I think it should. But then the universe just laughs and throws me off on a tangent somewhere so that I'm out of the way. That's kind of the way it works. And it's also the way this program works, because you never know what kind of questions are going to come out, let alone answers. Well, today's program is no different. I have a special guest in studio, the author of Conversations with Jesus, An Intimate Journey. And her name, the author's name, is Alexis Eldridge. And Alexis, thank you so much for joining us. And it's great to have you in studio.
It's great to be here.
Great. Now, let me, one of the first questions that came to mind when I saw the title of the book, and my understanding is the publishing company is the same company that published Conversations with God. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Was it a natural fit in that regard, or did you just happen to know the people involved with that publishing company and boom, it happened?
It was so divine. Jesus actually asked me to write a book that summer on my birthday. Mm-hmm. I've been hearing him for years. And 1 month later, I met the publisher for Conversations with God.
Wow.
Yeah. It was pretty miraculous.
Well, now, how long before that had you been conversing, communing, if you will, with Jesus in this context?
About 10 years.
Okay.
On different levels.
And you knew about the book Conversations with God?
I only knew of it.
Of it, okay. So then my question, why do we need to listen to the conversations with Jesus, as you tell it, when we have conversations with God, because aren't they sort of one and the same? Or let me rephrase that. From your perspective, how are they different?
So I never read Conversations with God. I was actually guided not to. Now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
What Jesus says in the book is that he is not God, but he is God-like, as are we.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge theme in the book. He wants us to understand our own divinity, so we could feel empowered. And so he is no longer seen as God, but a friend, a mentor, a teacher.
As I shared with you before we started, I worked for 15 years in a Christian radio station, and it was the best education I was ever paid for, because I learned a lot of other things in addition to broadcasting. And I also had an opportunity to read a book. Actually, it was a set of, I think, five books, five parts, called The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East.
Mm.
In one of those books, it talks about an experience that the author and some others had with people, or, if you will, the essences or entities, what have you, the human expressions, if you will, of Jesus, Pilate, and so forth. But what struck me was one of the things that Jesus was saying, and maybe we can address that a little bit. He was disappointed or even saddened by the fact that man had placed him up on this pedestal, because all he wanted to do was get close to man. He wanted to be one with man, not necessarily in the spiritual, metaphysical context, but even in the physical, metaphysical or spiritual, but in the physical context.
Yes.
That by putting him up on this pedestal, he was greater than. We could never have a one-on-one straight line conversation, if you will, that you seem to be having.
Right.
Is that your impression?
Yes, and that comes through loud and clear in the book. He doesn't want to be behind glass. He doesn't want to belong to a religion. He belongs to everyone, and he wants that to be known. And he's like us,
mm-hmm.
but he's evolved, you know, to another place.
He's sort of done the work that we're all striving
through,
if you will.
Yes, and he talks about that. He goes into stories of past lives where he learned lessons like we're learning, and how he evolved into Jesus, the Christed, as he calls himself in the book.
And that's what he prefers. I remember reading that, too, that he doesn't like Jesus Christ.
Right.
Because it's not accurate.
It's not a last name.
Right.
It's a position to evolve into, being Christed, having that Christ consciousness, that clarity, that generosity, that sense of oneness.
What about the conversations you've had in light of some of the books that have come out over the last 50 or 75 years, the lost books of the Bible, the forgotten books of the dead or something of Eden, and the life of Jesus from 13 to 33, or 13 to 30 roughly, the so-called missing years. And then there's the what are referred to as the apocryphal books that came out, which I have copies of at home. I'm rather intrigued by some of the stories, like when he brought back to life a sparrow or what have you, and he actually met one of the men as a boy that he hung on the cross with. Is there any insight that we're able to glean as far as, or is it even relevant, his childhood, his teen years, and his 20s?
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. Is it relevant? I love that. I haven't read any of those books that you're referring to. My relationship with him is so organic and raw, and I learn everything through him. He goes into stories and incarnations in the book that he feels are relevant to present day, so we and the readers can know that we're not alone. And that he's been there, done that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're doing it now.
Yeah.
And the book is like a guide to kind of bypass, circumvent, or go through in a more easeful way some of the challenges, you know.
Does he give any warnings as to, you know, if you people don't get with the program, you're going to annihilate yourselves. You're going to wind up as the human species, extinct.
So
things like in that context, or is that relevant?
That is relevant, and he does go into that. And I have to say, when he and I were editing together, because we did the whole process together, Jesus and I kind of toned down his language a little bit, because he, as you know, is impassioned and passionate, which is great, but a little strong. So he gave me license to tone down his language a little bit, because he is very concerned about our resources, about the environment, about procreation to the nth degree. You know, he's giving us warnings, but gentle and kind. Mm-hmm. But they're there in the book.
Now, you communicate with him.
Yeah.
Do you consider that channeling, or is it conversation? He doesn't come through you as far as the voice. You're just writing the words down that he shares with you.
Yeah, I see him and I write down what I hear. Every now and then I'll feel his energy in my energy, but I don't consider it channeling.
Okay.
It's a relationship.
Conversations with Jesus is the title of the book. Alexis Eldridge is my guest. I want you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand. Understanding
is what it's all about, and that's what we want to do, is we want to understand what's going on in our universe. I'm not sure, Alexis Eldridge, author of Conversations with Jesus, if the knowing the why is really relevant. By the way, that seems to be the key word for the program so far, is relevance. And maybe that's appropriate, because we do, as humans, we do tend to go off on these unbelievable tangents that take us in directions that it's not so much that we have no business going, but we really don't need to be going that way.
Right.
That's not our path.
Right.
And I'm guessing that Jesus is saying the same thing, that you have a path and it's a lot easier than you think, but you're making it real hard.
That's very resonant with his message.
How did you first start conversing? What was the event, if you will, or the period of time when suddenly, oh, it's Jesus that I'm hearing, you know, wherever I'm hearing it. I don't know if you hear him in your head, in your ears, how that conversation goes out loud.
Yeah. So I'm hearing a few questions, and he first came through a painting that I did when I was back in New York City as an educator for the Board of Education. It was a snow day, which is rare, and I was painting, and a form came through, and I recognized it as Jesus. And having a Jewish background, I was a little concerned and slept on it and decided to keep the form. And mm-hmm. that started everything. He then came out in some poetry I was writing. I was writing about him as if I knew him. It was very peculiar to me. I didn't understand what was happening. And years went by, and I left the Board of Ed, and I moved up to the country, and, you know, dot, 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 so many chapters. But there was a significant event that I'm going to illuminate, and it was a non-denominational spiritual group that I was at with a friend. And we were there with the intention of meeting our guide. And I thought I was going to meet Buddha because I'd been studying Dharma mm-hmm. and loving it. And Jesus showed up right there very vividly.
Were you surprised?
Beyond surprised. I said, you have the wrong person. You should be going to the lady next to me. Mm-hmm. But that was the event. He clearly let me know at that time he was my guide, and I was scared.
Well, now, why did you think that he'd come to the wrong person? Because you were Jewish?
Yeah.
I mean, he was Jewish.
But I didn't know. I didn't study the Bible. I didn't do any of that, you know. I didn't study mysticism. I just knew of this Jesus, like you said, that was on a pedestal mm-hmm. and was maybe Christian. I mean, I had these understandings that yeah. weren't real. And then he came to me, and after a while, I welcomed it. And, you know, then I ended up in healing school. I have quite the journey, quite mm-hmm. the yellow brick road, so I'm leaving things out. But ultimately, when I said, yeah, you know, I'm with you, you know, I learned so much about myself and for myself. And then I knew that other people had a benefit as well.
So were you raised in a traditional Jewish religious family?
A traditional secular Jewish family.
Okay.
Family.
And so you really didn't have a lot of the spiritual or religious teachings per se.
Zero.
Okay. So you had no points of reference as far as God and spirituality and faith and those
right.
types of things.
Right.
How did you come about those? Just through your own curiosity as you grew?
No. In my 20s, I'm in my 30s now. And in my 20s, I started developing pain in my body. You know, just pain in my body, and I was suffering greatly, and I knew there had to be another way to deal with the suffering other than the way I was dealing with it, with mental anguish and physical pain. And that's when I moved to the path of Buddhism, and it helped. I was just drawn to Buddhism, and from there it just took off. I started going to all these alternative practitioners and really liking being with that kindness that I was sensing with most of them, and that touch, that loving touch that I never had, you know, in my life mm-hmm. growing up. And it was that hence the journey, hence the path.
Are there specific times when you're in, shall we use the term, altered states, that you converse with Jesus, or is he conversing with you and you with him sort of nonstop throughout the day and night?
Yeah, it's nonstop throughout the day and night, yeah. Every now and then I'll want a little bit of time to myself, and I sense that. As soon as I put that out there, I sense his, you know, being away.
Yeah, he's giving you your space.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a sense of urgency coming from him as far as us?
I'd say so, because even my publisher said, Gal, this is fast-tracked.
Yeah.
I mean, he asked me to do it. A month later, I met the publisher. I started writing. He loved it. He published it. I mean, it was just, you know, done within such a quick amount of time, and, you know, then out in the stores. So I feel that's all divine, and that Jesus has, you know, his hand in that.
Now, since you've mentioned that there are certain materials, books that you have not read, I'm curious as to how this book, Conversations with Jesus, An Intimate Journey, how is this different than other works that are out there?
Well, what he says in the book is that a lot of people have misunderstood him. And
there's a surprise.
Yeah. I'm trying to be eloquent and kind with my language, and so is he.
Mm-hmm.
So people who've either written books or speak in some kind of authority like they know him, right,
yeah,
put out this information that's misguiding. And so what's happening with this book is that I don't have a reference. I'm hearing his truth. I'm hearing it raw. And I've cleared myself out enough to hear him as acutely as I do. And I've got no bias. It's just coming through, and it's his voice. So that's what's different about this book. It's authentically him. And I know that might sound bold, but that's really my truth and my experience.
Mm-hmm. I guess in a way, because you don't really have any points of reference because the input that you haven't had from religious teaching, then, like you say, you don't have the biases that, say, someone like myself, who has read the Bible several times, read a lot of other works by a lot of people who have read the Bible and are putting out different works about his life, his death, and spirituality and God and the universe and our future and so on and so forth. So you're sort of learning about him for the first time.
And it's not just about him. I'm learning about life and war and poverty and, all the things he talks about in the book. Parenting, childcare, sex, marriage. I mean, he's got views on everything. So he sets history right, mm-hmm, in the book. And he's also talking about all the issues that are happening today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm learning about him, but I'm learning about the ways of the world.
I found it interesting as I was going through my early years in what I called my search. I remember when I shared that with one of the ministers at the radio station. They said, well, once you've found Jesus, you can stop searching. Mm. And the only thing I could think of was, no, once I found Jesus, it just it propels me even further because, yeah, I have even more questions.
Yeah.
But one of the things that came to mind was hearing about all of this business with free will and all of these different things and freedom of choice. And yet, again, this is probably the way that was presented. And maybe you can elucidate on this from your perspective and your book. According to what the Bible says, as loosely interpreted, it's either God's way or the highway. Mm. You either go this way, i.e. there is no choice, or two choices. You go this way or you burn in hell.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not much of a choice.
Right.
You know, you're basically using extortion, God, to get me to follow you,
yeah,
to do your will.
Yeah.
And I thought, that just seems so contrary to even anything that Jesus ever said, or even what's written in the Old Testament.
Mm. So in the book, Jesus talks about having a destined purpose,
mm-hmm,
and aligning. These are words that he uses regularly. He never puts forth judgment. He does talk about the importance of aligning, though, with our purpose.
But that's different than, say, quote unquote, following God, doing,
yeah,
God's will, aligning with our purpose, that which we were created to,
yes, yes,
accomplish,
right,
or achieve or do.
Right. Aligning with our own divinity and our own power,
mm-hmm,
for the highest good of all.
And a lot of my guests talk about the duality of this world,
mm-hmm,
you know, good, bad, right, wrong, left, right, light and dark, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And yet every time we talk about spirituality, we talk about the universe, we talk about the still small voice inside. In your case, it's more than just a small voice, but it's a wonderful voice to have. And they're all talking about the unity, the collective, that we're all part of the whole and so forth. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. There's this duality, which leads me to believe that's in this universe. But when you go to the spiritual realm, there is no duality. There's only one. There's only the all, whether it's God. Everything's energy.
Right.
There's no good or bad energy. It's all energy. Or it's all light. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. In the book, Jesus does talk about something called darkness. He doesn't like to use the word evil.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
But darkness he does talk about, because we talk about the Holocaust. Well, there's been myriad Holocausts, but
sure.
We talk about World War II,
the one that we know
Hitler.
In our...
Yeah, so he talks about he dresses darkness, and he says that it was actually created to help push out more darkness, as like a magnet, you know, like a glacier kind of moving forward, taking, you know, all the darkness with it.
Right. Kind of like a black hole pulling in all of the darkness into it.
Yeah.
As it were.
And how a lot of people don't utilize it. They don't understand darkness's purpose. Which makes sense. I mean, what are we taught in school? Lots of things that don't support us and we don't need.
Right.
Not this stuff. Right?
So.
Coming from an ex-educator.
Well,
a new educator.
And it's been a long time since I've been in school, but I've also seen the product of our present-day educational system. And I'm discouraged from that standpoint that people are being taught what to think and not how. Not how to process the information that's being put out there, and not how to question it in an appropriate fashion that seeks the kinds of answers that we can live with, that we can understand, that we can say, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Or no, that doesn't make sense. We're just being fed information, rote memorization. And I look at some of the educational processes that are somewhat unique across the country. They're in pockets on how they are teaching in a way that is making the information practical.
Yes.
You know, it's not, okay, read that chapter. There'll be a test afterwards.
Right.
You take the test immediately after you've read the chapter, most likely you'll do really well. 10 days from now, forget it, because it's not practical.
And back to the word relevance. So much of the material isn't relevant, which is what I was alluding to a few moments ago. It's almost like we have to go back and really till the soil, you know, and work from the ground up again to I'm sorry, I feel speechless because there's so much to do.
Yeah.
There's so much to do and to unlearn and to relearn.
Now, this has been in the last 10 years, this conversation, and I know it's ongoing. A lot of people are concerned about 2012. They're concerned about the whole aspect of the Mayan calendar, whether it's Nostradamus or whatever sources. And there are prophecies and stories and traditions throughout other religions as well, various Native American Indian tribes as well, that talk about what we're in the midst of. Most of the folks that I've talked with say, it's just a cycle. The planet's been through it before. The universe has been through it before. It's not a big deal. It's just what is.
Yeah.
Any insights that you've been given as far as the intensification in this process, this transformation that we're being told we're going through?
So Jesus hasn't spoken about 2012 per se, but he talks about the urgency of now.
Okay.
We're using up our resources now. We're you know, bringing too many people into the world now. There's too much technology now. Okay, everything is now. We're not aligning enough now. You know, it's like, okay, so let's be here now, and do what we know we need to do, and take the focus off of that. That's going to happen, or it's not.
Right.
Okay, but prevention is in this moment. Consciousness now. Kindness now, mindfulness now, right?
So at the time that anybody's listening to this program, this is the now.
Yeah.
This is not December 21st, 2012.
Yeah.
This is
right
now.
Yeah.
And we have a hard time living in the now.
We sure do.
Have you been, if you will, guided or directed? As you said before, not to read the Bible. Have you been guided or directed to maybe start doing so? Or is that, again, not relevant.
I wasn't guided to not read the Bible. I was guided to not read Conversations with God.
That's right.
Only because I imagine they didn't want me to be influenced, so it makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely.
But the Bible, I read a few passages within the past couple years prior to the book because I actually took a marriage course at a Methodist church near my place in Virginia when I was writing the book.
Uh-huh.
And I really liked it. And I liked it. I did. But once I found out that that church thought Jesus was God, that just didn't resonate with my heart. And the book came later. I didn't even know that Jesus agreed, you know. But I don't feel drawn to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does he talk much about the Bible? Talk about what others have created in his name as far as those kinds of things. And again, I know he's not, you know, not wanting to be judgmental, because I, in spite of the fact that in some of the passages where it talks about him going into the temple and overturning all the tables because he's a little ticked, well, not just a little ticked, about the money changers the temple.
Yeah.
Is there any conversation as far as, you know, being misquoted or being quoted at all? I never even said that. It's not that I was quoted wrongly. I never said it, because one of the passages that comes to mind that I talk with a lot of people about when we talk about the here and the now and the direction that we're going as a species, that we're not living our purpose, is that I do, the works that I do, you will do, but you will do greater works. And I don't see us doing that today. At all, not even close.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with raising of the dead or healing of the sick.
Right.
It's of transforming our own lives and our world into a better place.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love what you're saying because it's so true. And that comes through in the book really strongly. Again, it's aligning with our purpose. He talks about the distractions. So many distractions that are keeping us from what you're talking about and how we are destined for these amazing things. And even though technology is useful and wonderful on a certain level, he's saying that we've gone so beyond what was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And within the line of what's in the highest good and service, okay? We've bypassed that to such a world of distraction and impeding on one another's lives, you know, getting up in each other's faces, you know, there's no sense of personal space anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he's saying that's a real downfall.
Yeah.
It's totally derailing us. He says that.
But there would be those who say, well, this isn't the first time this has happened to man. I mean, even in the last 2,000 years, we've had maybe not to the level by any means of the technologies, but there have been nations and rulers and armies that have you know, pillaged and plundered and undermined a sovereign nation's ability to just go out and go about living their lives.
Okay.
Because this other nation comes in and wants to subjugate them. And to me, in a way, that's kind of the same kind of thing, in that neither group is able to live their purpose, to live out their purpose.
Well, he also talks in the book about race, wars, religion, all that whole connection, and how he's so misunderstood in that way, that race was put on the planet to create beauty, spice, texture, difference,
mm-hmm.
so we can learn from each other and celebrate the differences, and how we use it as an impetus for war, for reason, you know, for more separation. He wants out of all that. He wants all that to end.
I've heard it said that sin is nothing more than us creating a separation between ourselves and God, and maybe in this instance, in our conversation, separating ourselves from our life's purpose.
That's exactly it. That's what he says.
There's another passage, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. There's a version of the Bible by a Johannes Graeber, who wrote a book called Communication with the Spirit World of God. He was a Catholic priest, and he began channeling these entities that began to speak about some of the misdirections by, in that book, the Catholic Church. Now, this is Johannes's book, but he also was given a new translation, say, of the New Testament. And that passage that I read reads in his version, "Seek ye first communication with the spirit world of God," as opposed to "seek ye first the kingdom of God." What about our ability to communicate with Jesus or Paul or Peter or any of the other apostles or any of the other saints or that we've labeled as saints, who are nothing more than just people like ourselves? What about communication with what some might term the other side?
Yeah, the invisible world, the spirits, the guides. Jesus talks a lot about that in the book. He advocates it. He says he's not the only one. Mm-hmm. I mean, we want to be clear that we're communicating with spirits that have our good intentions, okay? The spirits that have our backs, mm-hmm. So we need to get clear within ourselves so we can really sense light and dark. And he totally advocates that, welcoming in that support.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for us. It's here. It's a relationship. It's a dance. I know myself, I'm not just working with Jesus. I've got a whole spirit family.
Mm-hmm.
He's my main guy. But
now, not really knowing much about him.
Yeah.
When you had that first encounter, I mean, you said, no, you've got the wrong person. It's the gal next to me that you should be going to. Did you know who he was, what his status was in the human community to feel that way? Or was it a feeling you had coming from him that you didn't feel worthy of, and that's why you said, no, it's this other person that you should be going to, not me?
That's an interesting question. I haven't thought about that distinction. I know we're on air, so I can't just sit here and contemplate. But, it's probably a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah. More so what I thought because of what society and culture had taught me through media.
Mm-hmm.
But probably a little bit like, who am I? Who am I to have this kind of intimate relationship with you?
And you knew who he was. I mean, you knew his history enough in that context.
Yeah, enough to say, I don't think you've, come to the right person.
Mm-hmm.
But it really worked itself through. All those kinks were worked out. And there were kinks. Like a real relationship. I mean, like yelling and anger from me, when I wasn't understanding what he was teaching me and some of these ways he was teaching me stuff. But that was all authentic and necessary. And he never walked away.
Yeah. I know that in my, I'll call it my upbringing, in broadcasting in that religious station for 15 years, I got the distinct impression from many of the people that broadcast that we'd been created by God, but that we were nothing more than lowly worms, and that God could just, just as easily stamp us out as continue to give us life. And that it didn't mesh with me. It didn't resonate because of the fact that, okay, here's this loving God, and He's the creator, and he's created me in his image. And then, of course, you go into the whole biblical story about Jesus and his crucifixion and the whole reason behind all of that from a spiritual standpoint. I thought, that doesn't make any sense. If I'm nothing more than a lowly worm, then why would he do that?
Mm-hmm.
Which I said, no, we have to have value to God. We have to be of some value for him to do that. To, as the stories go, sacrifice his only son. And that's what I've kind of held on to, is that we have to be important to God, the all, the universal power, again, whatever name you want to put on it.
Yes.
Do we have value? Are we that important? I mean, what different? I mean, we're little specks in the universe. I mean, we could be hit by a meteor or a comet and the planet's gone, and so are we.
Well, first of all, Jesus would never even compare us. Jesus would never say the worms are lowly.
Oh, okay, good point. We're demeaning the worms.
Yeah. I mean, all creatures are created in this divine image of these gods, goddesses, you know, whatever terms we want to put on it. He would say creators, and he'd say as a male and female energy working together that's created everything. Most everything. We've gone and done our part in creating some challenges, which he also goes into. But we're all valuable, and this is the ground up part I'm talking about. We need to go into the school systems. We need to go into the families and teach this stuff from first moments.
Yeah.
How we're light, we're divinity, we're powerful. Let's find our purpose. Let's dance on this heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Let's stop creating darkness and utilize it instead, you know.
I want to dovetail off of that a little bit too, because you said earlier that there were sort of two levels of darkness, and one was, and they were both created, and one was created sort of to magnetize, if you will, the darker darkness. And I always found it interesting when the comparisons to God and the devil, you know, Satan and that whole area. And if God created everything, literally everything, then God created the devil. And I remember having a conversation with someone, and they were talking about what I was going to say before God on the day of judgment. And I said, well, and this was where I was at the time, I said, I guess what I want to say to God on the day of judgment is, look, okay, on the one hand, I did the very best with my life that I could with the life that you gave me. And so, you know, I take full responsibility. On the other hand, you created me, so it's your responsibility. I did everything I could do, and if it wasn't good enough, you're going to do with me what you're going to do with me anyway. I have no control over that. And again, this was in that paradigm of heaven and hell, that whole concept. This program, New Paradigms, you know, Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, we're trying to give people choices and knowledge of those choices, whether they've heard of them before or not. And specifically, if they haven't ever heard them before, I mean, because how would you know to say go to the left fork as opposed to go to the right fork if you couldn't even see the left fork?
Right.
You'd always go to the right.
Right, right. Well, that was my story. I was in New York City, a guidance counselor, feeling like I didn't belong, feeling good about helping emotionally challenged little people and their families. But as far as the school system and the way the staff was working and what they were teaching and what they were feeding these kids literally in the lunchrooms and these sick buildings, I knew I did not belong there, but I had no reference. I had no idea. One of my dearest friends, he would say, leave. And I'd say, I don't know where to go. I don't have a model. I don't have a left. You know, all I could see is this. Everyone I know is living in a box conventionally.
Yeah.
I didn't. So you're right. Like, how do we even know? What happened for me was sickness. I got sick.
Yeah.
And so I could say by default, I went on this alternative path. But I think it was God's microphone.
Did you even know that alternative path even existed?
Well, yes, because I was dating someone who danced in that arena. Interestingly enough, he's still living in the conventional arena, and I've totally left it. And I'm, you know, I've moved on to this path of light, I call it.
Let me ask you to, before we take our next break here, let me ask you to do a quick comparison between the Alexis before and after this extraordinary period in your life, these past 10 years that culminate into conversations with Jesus.
A comparison?
Yeah. Who is Alexis before and who is Alexis after?
Thank you for that question.
And no prompting from outside sources.
All intuitively driven. I was so scared. I'd say fear was my umbrella, and it lived inside me, and it came out as pain in my mind, in my body. And now it is such a walk of faith. Those are the two words. That's my light and my dark. I am doing things now that have no rational purpose. you know, undercurrent. Moving to Oregon, not knowing anybody. Just hearing Alexis move to Ashland, you know. My publisher thought I was crazy. But he gets it now. You know, yeah. He's like, honey, you're the woman who wrote the book. Okay. You know, faith. So, yeah, fear and faith. That's how I would compare from fear to faith.
It sounds an awful lot like my journey here. Born and raised in Phoenix. And after, what was it, 46 years, almost 46 years living there, lost my job. My wife lost her job. And she's a native Santa Barbaran. So we thought, well, let's take a week off and go there and get some vacation time and then figure out what we're going to do. And we decided, since Ireland was a little out of our price range at the time, Santa Barbara was the next best choice. And with interestingly enough, with absolutely no fear whatsoever about the future at that time, I said because she was concerned, she felt like she was on a precipice, that we both were. What do we do? And I said, well, everybody that I've ever interviewed and talked with and the books I've read and the workshops I've been through, they all say the same thing. When you're on the edge of a cliff, you jump and you trust. And so we did. Mm-hmm. And there was no fear. And here we are today, you and I talking. And I don't know what our next step is. That has not been hasn't been revealed to me. So apparently there is no, you know, big next step as far as moving. We have some dreams, some plans, some hopes, and those kinds of things. But again, that's part of what this is all about. This program is, there may be a choice out there I don't even know about.
You know? Right.
And right. It's extraordinary, to say
yes.
the very least.
Yes.
It really is. Conversations with Jesus, an Intimate Journey. Alexis Eldridge is my guest. I'm Richard Dugan. I want you to stay right where you are. We're going to wrap up the program in just a couple of moments.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm your host, Richard Dugan, every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. And we say so thank you for joining us every Saturday. You know, you can listen to these programs. They're archived on the website, richarddugan.com. I would have gotten tellmeyourstory.com, but it was taken. So I had to go with what some would be a little narcissistic type of website. But I figured, well, it's easier to remember. So there you go. It would have really been narcissistic if I'd used my middle name, which I did for the longest time. That was so strange. That was my father's first name. And for some reason, I just decided, I don't need to use that. Just first and last is fine. And it's been kind of fun. Not that I think it's changed my life extraordinarily, but nonetheless, you can find these programs on the website and get in touch with our guests. As a matter of fact, you can go, I'm assuming you have a website where people can find out more about the book and about you and what's happening.
Yes, conversationswithjesus.com.
There's a tough one. Conversations with Jesus and the .com, and Alexis Eldridge is my guest. And in our last few moments, though I may have a couple of other questions before we wrap up, one that I ask most all of my guests, especially folks who've been on for the first time, you could have gone in a lot of different directions, and actually you did. I mean, you were an educator, and you said you were a counselor.
Yes.
Why this? Why now?
Why this? Why now? So I started writing when I was in college. I didn't know that I had such a passion for it, but it came through. And then I started working as a guidance counselor after graduate school. So I had all of this in me. I had been feeling like a book needed to be birthed for many years, and I didn't know what that book was going to be. And all efforts kind of plummeted, you know, all manuscripts are still in storage, other manuscripts. So I know that might sound a little discursive. There's so much on my journey, which is also in the book. But why this, why now? Because this is the most meaningful thing I could be doing on the planet. And now is a crucial time on the planet. So that's the marriage. I answered my calling. And it's still calling.
Mm-hmm.
Book two is in the works.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Same title, just book two?
Right, but another drop line, opposed to an intimate journey. It'll be something different.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know that you have been prompted to write this book.
Yes.
If you can answer this question, what do you hope to achieve through this book and even the second or third or however many additional supplements there are?
What do I hope to achieve?
What do you want to achieve?
I want to give him his voice. So I'm trying to move myself out of it, which is why I believe the book even manifested, because I stepped out of the way and did something that was for the highest good, and I moved my ego out of it. I want Jesus to be known for who he really is, this beloved, beautiful guy, you know, with humor and wisdom and strength and a heart big enough for everybody, non-denominational Jesus, you know, with a big voice and a lot to say. You know, I want people to know he belongs to everyone. He wants people to know all this. And I'm his voice.
Would you consider yourself after, well, I don't want to say after this experience because I know it's ongoing, but specifically after the creation of this book, would you consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus?
I can't even, that doesn't even make sense to me.
Okay.
That terminology. It's more about living what is. So what is that we have a purpose. What is that we're powerful. What is that we, when we align with it, all the magic is exposed that is already here. But doors start opening. Everything starts opening. And he's this groovy cat that wants to be along for the ride. But to say I'm a follower, I don't like that. That brings up proselytizing and all that yucky energy.
I understand. I hear you right there. I do.
Yeah.
I always found that kind of strange that I was never able to find, I thought I was supposed to find somebody to follow, you know, some personage, even someone living today in my lifetime. I've been intrigued by many, many people, but never been drawn to one.
Yeah.
That was the one.
Yeah. Well, there's many forms, many guises of spirit and light. You know, whatever resonates, whatever works. You know, we're supposed to be doing something here and enjoying what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Matter of fact, that's one of the questions that I put to some of the guests as well, and that is, you know, what are we supposed to achieve here? What is it that we're supposed to accomplish as a species? And not necessarily as individuals in this lifetime, but as a species. So, I mean, what's the human race here to do? Does he address that?
That's like the biggest question.
I know it is, because I get a lot of the metaphysical and spiritual answers to that question. But I'm looking at the practical. I think of the space program of the 60s, and like that was the last time that the human race, in larger numbers than normal, more of a majority, got together to accomplish something of a positive and a creative nature.
Yeah.
That was the last time.
Yeah.
Even though the people in China or the people in Pakistan had no part in the launches and the landings and what have you, they held their breath like everybody else on the planet when these guys were out there and hoped that they would come back safely. That kind of collectiveness. What are we here to achieve? Does he address that at all? Or are we here to achieve anything? Maybe.
Well, we're here.
True.
And a lot has gone awry. So right now, the focus is on creating harmony again.
Okay.
Right? So if we kind of re-begin there, and we can actually be kind to each other and accept one another and not see, right, the shape and the colors, and but just see kindredness.
Yeah.
I believe we'll all get those answers. Okay. So I don't want to just come in and drop that answer down like a big bomb.
Okay.
Yeah.
Conversations with Jesus, an Intimate Journey, Alexis Eldridge. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
I'm Richard Dugan, and you've been listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Join us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And go to the Richard Dugan website, richarddugan.com, radio shows page. You'll be able to hear the archive of this and all of the other programs that we have done since September 7th of 2007. Until next Saturday at the same time, love to all.